A form of artistic expression thousands of years old, thriving in the 21st century. Stay tuned. Hello. You are listening to a segment of Issues and Ideas called Ears on Art. Ears on Art is dedicated to the exploration and the advancement of the visual arts. It is produced at the studios of KCBX listener-supported public radio in San Luis Obispo, California, serving the Central Coast, from Ventura to Salinas. I am Stephen DeLuque. Co-host Krista Hewitt and I visit with today's guests, Danelle and Fred Passion, the founders and creators behind Passiflora Mosaics in Grover Beach. The artistic technique of mosaic is thousands of years old and predates Roman times. But Fred and Danelle have taken this ancient technique and brought it into the modern world, using a variety of materials and even mosaicing onto three-dimensional shapes and sculptures. Let's let them tell their story.
Stephen and I are here in Grover Beach at Passiflora Mosaic Studio with Danelle. Good afternoon.
Hi, Krista. Hi, Steve.
And with Fred.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
I think a quick overview of what you do here would be helpful for people because we haven't interviewed anybody that's done mosaics before. So just the general nature of your studio and art.
Well, we teach workshops, and we also do commissioned art, sculptures, murals, fireplaces, backsplashes, whatever different architectural features a person might want.
And these are constructed using?
Mosaic is an ancient art form. So what we do with it is we do what is basically mixed media mosaic, which is a combination of a lot of different materials, anywhere from tile and stone, glass, found objects, shells, pebbles, you know, a lot of different things. Almost anything that sticks to concrete, you know, we'll use.
Okay, so that's the overview. You're a husband and wife team, so you've been at this a certain amount of time, but what's your history? Danelle, when did you start getting involved with art?
Well, I've always been interested in art since I was young, but never took anything real serious until about 2000, when I found myself interested in trying mosaics. And so I took a bunch of china from the shelf, antique china. It was kind of hard to break up those plates at first, but once I got going, I started creating a table, and I needed Fred's help. We got him on board. He created the tabletop. We worked on it together, and I guess you could say it all started from there.
Fred, do you have anything to add to that from your perspective of how art started to happen for you?
Yeah, well, you know, as Donnell said, you know, we've pretty much been interested in art for all of our lives. In fact, that's basically how we met, you know, was in high school, and we both took art classes back in the early 70s. For as long as we've known each other, you know, we've done some type of art or craft, and it just kind of evolved into both of us doing mosaics.
Another thing I might add, after we made that table, an interior designer saw it and asked us if we would make a fireplace using china. So after we made the fireplace, it turned out really beautiful, and we stood back, and the fire was on, and it just was dancing all over the sparkling tile. And I told Fred, we ought to try this for a living. This is way more fun than delivering mail. So I quit my part-time job and started, and then it took about, a couple years ago that Fred quit his landscaping, and we went on board together doing this full-time.
Fred, if you were doing landscaping, has there been a connection that you brought from that?
Yeah, there's probably several things. You know, when I was doing landscaping. I did quite a bit of landscape design. I think that gave me a good foundation for some of the designs that we do now. In almost anything you do, there are design similarities to everything. So
I think the pebble mosaic in the floors and the concrete and the walkways too, it really interests him and myself as well. There's that connection in the landscaping, the hardscape.
One of the places where some of you may have seen some of their work is at Camp Ocean Pines in Cambria, and that certainly has been making use of working into the concrete and then the beautiful amphitheater that got built. You want to talk a little bit about what were some of the things that you did up there? Because I think beyond being the business, it was also about a sense of community and community service.
Yeah, Chris Cameron, the director at Camp Ocean Pines, approached us about leading a volunteer group for mosaicing the amphitheater seats. It started, and then the steps. So we led, I think there were over 100 volunteers. It was pretty scary at first, but it went really well. It was a lot of fun, and we just knew it had to be about camaraderie and not being a perfectionist. So there's just some aspects of it you kind of have to let go. But in fact, we have a workshop there coming up in about a week, and one of the ladies that is in the workshop, her first experience was there at Camp Ocean Pines at that volunteer group.
Well, it's really a pretty place. I mean, the camp, but that amphitheater with all of the color and the rainbow sequencing was really nice.
And what materials did you use on the amphitheater?
Oh, that's a good question, because we had people donate materials. So we got costume jewelry, we got tile, glass, beads, shells, you name it, little salt shakers. It was endless, the things we got, and we incorporated almost all of it, and it just is really pretty eclectic.
I had a question about all of the things that got donated, and most of the inlay work is done sort of on the face of the seat, so it's not something that somebody's sitting on most of the time, so it could afford to be a little bit more dimensional.
But we also did the seats as well.
And so when you were getting things like salt and pepper shakers, were you breaking them up or using them as is?
We didn't, quote, break them. We usually cut things with a tile saw so that they have a flat side and it's easier to put onto the wall of the face of the seat.
Were the materials provided to you beforehand so you had an idea as to what you were going to work with, or did you just show up and there was a pile?
Yeah, prior to the project, Chris Cameron had an idea of the design, which was a rainbow-themed mosaic design. So the amphitheater itself has, I believe, 7 rows of benches, and each row was to be a color of the rainbow. With that in mind, we asked people to try to donate colorful things that would go along with the theme. So we did have a little bit of an idea of what we were going to do, but a lot of it was improvisational.
And so Friday night before the event, we had the processing station. We had people sorting and breaking pieces, and so we got it all ready for the next morning.
I can see the bins now.
And how long did this take?
What was it, 3 days?
That's
3 days.
That's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
In terms of the length of time that it took, the seats actually have, is it stone or something there with cracks that then you have filled with the color?
The seats themselves are flagstone, I believe, yeah. So there are spaces in between, kind of irregular spaces that were filled with mosaic.
So that was all in place, obviously, before you came.
Yeah, we asked the person in charge of building the benches to leave them prepared a certain way that to be able to do the mosaic. everything was prepared and ready for us to go in and do the mosaic work.
That's the sort of ahead of time stuff that some of us don't think about very much, but it would have been so easy to just have a mason do the normal fill in or put things too close together and leave you with nothing. So I'm sure that it was really important to have that conversation ahead of time.
We've done several projects, you know, at Camp Ocean Pines, and we've gotten to know their facility manager, who his name is Dan, and he does a lot of the construction up there or oversees it. So we're kind of on the same page as far as what we require, you know, to be able to complete our, you know, mosaic projects. It just made things run smoother.
I've been in the amphitheater now a few times, and it's just really a pleasure. It's colorful, and yet it's subtle. I mean, it's not the kind of thing where you're just overwhelmed with pattern and everything. It's just a wonderful place for discovery. You go, oh, there's half a teacup. Oh, yeah. There's, you know, something else. Several of my visits to the town of Pietrasanta, Italy, there is a little mosaic studio there, and it is the glass, very conventional, you know, what we think of as wall art. And you sit and you watch these men, and they work in stations. So if you're into blues and greens, you work over here, and if you're into yellows and reds, you're over here. And when I talked with one of them, the pride that he brought to the situation was, in reference to marble workers or bronze casters or other things that happen in that town, you're conscious of how techniques have changed all those years. Things have improved. And he says, for us, it's the same. They had their hammer, and they have the little cutting wedge, and that's it. And he was very proud of the fact that for thousands of years, that's what it was about. So you may have a few more tools at your disposal, but I thought that that was kind of an interesting thing to be proud about.
Well, when it comes to mosaic, there are so many styles and diversity. In fact, Fred uses the hammer and Hardy the old way for a lot of the stonework that he prefers doing. And there's so many different kinds of cutting tools, nippers. Yeah, the tools really make it a lot easier now. But the tessera, the diversity in that really can take you into a lot of directions.
So I think that brings about the question of, a lot of this for you has been self-taught, or were you able to go places and study with people in terms of some of the techniques?
You know, both Donnell and I are pretty much self-taught in, you know, in the art of mosaic. We haven't really done much traveling, you know, as far as, you know, to see ancient works, and, you know, we've done a lot of reading.
Yeah, being the fact that we are self-taught, once we did get going, I mean, after I broke a lot of plates with a hammer using the wrong tools, I found out, you know, later that there's a better way to do it.
But not nearly as much fun.
Yeah, that's true. You know, we have taken other educational workshops for the sculpture end of it, the styrofoam sculpture. Fred took a workshop in that, and we then incorporated what he learned there, and now he teaches the concrete sculpture workshop, which creates the base for a lot of the mosaic sculptures. And he's added his own little formulas, which I think makes it a lot better than some. We try to keep abreast of, you know, things that affect our industry and our what that can make our workshops better.
To me, that's just all really impressive. There's so many varieties of ways that you're creating work, two-dimensionally, three-dimensionally, mm-hmm. out of different materials, that to get enough of the answers, how is this going to hold up when I set it outside? How is this going to stay on the wall? How is this going to even be makeable? I'm mm-hmm. impressed when people can research those things and come to an answer.
You are listening to a segment of Issues and Ideas called Ears on Art, produced here at listener-supported public radio KCBX, serving the California Central Coast. Today, we are visiting with the owners of Passiflora Mosaics in Grover Beach, Donnell and Fred Passion.
With the Camp Ocean Pine references, that work is more what we might think of in terms of the more two-dimensional kind of surface, the recessed area gets filled in with interesting materials. But you are doing quite a bit of three-dimensional work. What are some of the things you have discovered about how to?
Well, we got a job for Cottage Hospital in Santa Barbara a couple years ago, and we created two garden benches that looked like little sofas out of styrofoam. And we also created a 5.5 foot tall sculpture with different animals kind of stacked up on top of each other, like kind of like a little totem. That was a real learning process.
Was that trial and error?
I'll let Fred talk about that.
Yeah, in a way, yeah, it was. In fact, you know, a lot of the projects that we take on, you know, they're so different, you know, and original that each project is almost the prototype, you know, you mm-hmm. might say, of the finished project. You know, each one is a little different. So we come across things as we're creating different pieces that are for us, they're done for the first time. You know, we try to research things as far as especially how to construct things properly. A lot of sculptures have armatures or frames that are built out of a lot of times steel, and you know, so we research how things are constructed, you know, because you don't want to go through all the time, expense, and work and have something fail, because that's all it takes is, you know, one link of the chain breaking and the whole thing is messed up.
Yeah, especially in mosaics too, the foundation is really important mm-hmm. because everything is built on that. And so if that fails, it can crack your grout and pieces can fall out. And so we pride ourselves in trying to do things right structurally, as well as doing our best to present a beautiful product in the end.
When you're doing the workshops here in your studio, and let's say you're doing one of the sculptural ones, I assume probably giving people a certain kind of size to work in so that they're not trying to build Mount Olympus in the day.
We learned that in the beginning. That was important, size restrictions, because people want to create their dream project in a two-day workshop, and that doesn't work very well.
Let's go through what that is in terms of making something that's going to be durable probably outside and yet not weigh 500 pounds. So what are some of the tricks on that one? What's going to happen in my 3 days here?
Well, basically we have everyone start out with a foam block, polystyrene or styrofoam. We do give them size limitations. You know, so the project could be done in a couple of days. We work with them trying to develop a design of some sort. We try to have them choose something that's basically simple and blocky. You know, the workshop is more about learning the technique rather than coming up with a masterpiece. And then from that point, we transfer the design onto the block of foam. And then we use hot wire tools, various tools, you know, to rough cut the form and then refine the form. And after that's done, the form is covered with a mesh, which is like a fiber mesh. And then we mix up what we call concrete, which is kind of a generic word for cement-based products. It's closer to more like a stucco or plaster. So the form, after it's been meshed, is covered with a real thin coat of this stucco mix. We've kind of formulated, like as Donnell said earlier, you know, our own little formulation, although mostly all concrete mixes are basically the same. You know, they're made up of sand, cement, and a few other things. Then we show people how to coat the form with this mix. All of that is done the first day. The second day, they come back after it's been sitting there overnight curing. We have them come back the next day, and it's the second coat is applied. you know, they take the form home, let it cure for about a week, then it's ready to finish either in mosaic or stained or however they want to, you know, finish the form.
I'm just going to go back to the hot wire thing because we used one of those in school for a while, and I think it's just a really ingenious tool. Basically, a wire that has an electric current going through it, right, which is the heat, and then styrofoam product melts as you're mm-hmm. cutting it. If any of you have ever attempted to cut styrofoam with any other type of tool, and then you try to figure out for the next week how to get it off of your body, the static electricity with everything clinging. So this just kind of cuts like really nice butter, and it just goes through, but you still have to know what you're doing. So the people that are doing that workshop probably have done a regular mosaic one with you so that they would know how to apply stuff after they took it home, or do they come back and do that in a second go-round?
Either. Some people already have their own experience, and they will like to expand it by, you know, doing a 3D sculpture. So, and then sometimes people have taken our mosaic workshops, and they want to go a little bit farther. So sometimes what they'll do the sculpture here, and then they'll go to Camp Ocean Pines mosaic retreat, and so that they can have up to 4 days to actually mosaic it and work on the project and get a lot more done than they could here on a 1 day, you know, mosaic workshop at our studio.
We're sitting in this wonderful studio, and the resource material we're laughing, but we shouldn't be, because you can tell that this has been a long time in collecting. But I'm also having the feeling that there's a certain amount of thrift store shopping or Goodwill. There's seashells, there's china, there are old plates, there's
teapots,
stones, you know, whatever. Just an ongoing process.
Yeah, that's true. And the funny thing is, though, we rarely go hunting for materials anymore. A lot of times someone will drop off a little care package at the door. In fact, just this week I heard a car pull up. I go, oh, someone's here, and then they left, and I go out, oh, there's a box on our doorstep of broken things. So that's one way. Not too long ago there was an ad in Craigslist, and I happened to see it about somebody was moving their storage, and they had like 20 years worth of pool tile, which is like the best kind you can get. So all these beautiful shades of blue and green. And so we kind of called him, and that very morning he was going to call us because someone had given him our number. So that was a pretty nice nice deal we got there. In fact, we still owe him a workshop. So if you're listening out there, feel free to come claim your workshop you've never taken.
On the barter system.
Yes. We love to barter.
So what's special about pool tile?
Oh, it's better for outdoor use than indoor use. It's a porcelain hard body tile as compared to softer tile.
Okay.
It just holds up better outdoors in freeze-thaw conditions.
It better.
Yeah.
So a decent amount of time is spent doing your workshops, but you're obviously doing your own work. What kinds of things inspire you?
My favorite thing is the small sculptures, like the little cats and dogs and animals and things in nature that really inspire us, using kind of an eclectic found object kind of art as well.
Fred?
A lot of the work that we've been doing lately is it's a style that, you know, we call organic, and it's basically a type of mosaic that uses a lot of different materials, such as the stone, tile, glass, even metal sometimes. It's all very textural and a lot of relief to it. All the small pieces, they're fit very tightly together. So those pieces are left ungrouted. pieces like that were grouted, you know, you would lose a lot of the detail and the depth, you know, the individual tessera. That's probably my favorite style to do.
I really love doing that too on large outdoor pots and so forth. It's really, I don't know, it's just something about sticking the next piece next to the other piece and just progressing into this just big, beautiful piece of with shells and glass and china, and it's pretty fun.
Are these objects utilitarian or are they garden sculpture?
It seems like most of the things we've ever made are utilitarian. They have another purpose, but it has evolved into a lot of garden sculpture. Our house is small, so we don't have a lot of wall space, so wall art hasn't been our number one choice.
Well, you do a number of workshops throughout the year. How many do you do every year?
1 to 2 a month.
But then somewhere there's still time that you're finding to do something that's yours.
Not enough time. We don't get to do, seem to have enough time to do our own art that inspires us, you know. But got to make a living too, so.
How do commission pieces work? I mean, like, how did Cottage Hospital find you?
There was a call for artists, and we did the tedious work of filling out the application step by step. I mean, it's a lot of work to get those applications right. We were among 113, wasn't that about it, that were accepted?
There were over 400 that applied.
And as I remember, they were looking for indoor and outdoor work and different medium, so they were really on a mass mission, which was kind of cool.
Today, co-host Krissa Hewitt and I have been conversing with the founders and creative genius behind Passiflora Mosaics, Donnell and Fred Passion. We will continue our conversation next week when we discuss the programs, projects, and workshops offered at their studio in Grover Beach. Speaking of workshops, you may visit their website at passifloramosaics.com to check a list of all the workshops being offered at this time. The website allows you to register online as well. PassifloraMosaics.com. The Joel Peter Witkin and Jerome Witkin joint show titled Twin Visions at the Jack Rutberg Gallery at 357 North La Brea in Los Angeles has been extended to August 30th due to the extraordinary international response. This exhibit by identical twin brothers has been called the most important exhibition in Los Angeles. Joel Peter and Jerome were this program's guests for both of the April 2014 shows. For more information on the exhibit, go to jackrutbergfinearts.com. This historic exhibition brings together, for the first time, the works of these identical twin brothers, artistically estranged for 50 years. For those artists who are participating in this year's Open Studios Art Tour, mark your calendar for June 23rd and 24th. Proofing of the catalog listings will be held both days from noon until 6 p.m. at the Arts Obispo offices, located at 1123 Mill Street, just off of Santa Rosa. This gives you the only opportunity to review your catalog listing, including imagery, spelling, and map location. For information, call the Arts Obispo offices at 544-9251 or visit the website at artsobispo.org. You have been listening to a segment of Issues and Ideas called Ears on Art, produced at the studios of listener-supported public radio KCBX. My name is Stephen DeLuque, and for co-host Krissa Hewitt, thank you for your support.